Am I the asshole for reconsidering my engagement after he told me he will cheat on me if I don't have sex with him? I love being single. Yeah. Single ladies in the chat, say what's up, everybody.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back. Okay, I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, who does come bearing bittersweet news to kick off the start of this episode. Not to set the tone for this episode in kind of a sadder place, but that's the energy that I'm coming to this episode with, okay? We've had a crybaby week. Sometimes it's gotta happen. Come on, I'm a Pisces. You think I don't have crybaby weeks? This week was a crybaby week. And the majority of that reason is because my latest and greatest foster kitten, Bewildered, was officially adopted, which is so good. That is such good news. That is my objective. When we're fostering, the goal is goodbye. So that's what we did. We said goodbye to Bewildered. He went to his forever home, and I did cry my little eyeballs out. Yes, I did. I sobbed and cried. Before he left, after he left, several days after, the whole thing has been an emotional roller coaster for me. I get attached to every single foster that I have, but Bewildered was particularly special, mostly because of how he and Mango were, who the second I start talking, she finds her way over here. Where have you been, girl? I haven't seen you all day. So it's bittersweet news because it's a great thing to see him get adopted and go to his forever home. I'm very happy for him. Oh my God, there's cat hair all over the place in here. But it's sad because he was such a sweetie and I loved him and Mango loved him, but it was time for him to go. So I cried my little eyes out. And honestly, this week has also been so gloomy in New York. So it's really been adding to the crybaby vibes. It was just inevitable, really. Of any week that Bewildered could have been adopted, of course, it was the week that was like, the vibes were very crybaby, giving me the perfect little drama backdrop to all of my crybaby moments. Because that's the spice of life at the end of the day. Finding things to be just a little bit more dramatized, okay? Why cry on a sunny day when you can cry on a rainy one? It's just, you know, a little mise-en-scene, if you will. I saw a TikTok the other day that just said, there's not a single nonchalant bone in my body. I care so much, I could literally throw up. And it's like, yeah, I think that's the theme of my entire life. I think I find new ways to connect to that idea every single day that goes by. People always ask me how I emotionally get through this part of fostering, the goodbyes. And when I first started fostering a year ago now, which is crazy, it's been a full year of fostering these cute little babies. I think I've had 10 kittens in total over the last year. But people have asked me a bunch, like, how do you do it? How do you emotionally do it? And after my first set of kittens, the advice that I received from other people that foster was to tell me that, like, it gets easier every single time you do it, which I do agree with to an extent. Like, it definitely, I am familiar with this feeling. I am not new to this feeling. I understand the grief that comes with fostering now. It's like its own kind of loss and grief and ending. It's kind of like a breakup, I guess, because it's like the pet, they're still here. They're just with a different loving family and not me. And that was my whole job, was to be a stepping stone to them. In breakups, I would prefer not to be a stepping stone, but I'm sure that I have been. But I think looking back on the last year of fostering, like, yeah, it gets easier in the sense that it becomes more familiar. However, that familiarity actually doesn't protect me from the pain in any way. I feel like I feel the same kind of sadness every single time one of the kittens leaves me. And I have just had to find sweetness in that pain rather than expecting that pain to dissipate or go away at some point. It hasn't. It's sad to me every single time. I cry every single time. And I have to just pull that pain up a seat at the table rather than expecting that through time, through fostering more kittens, that I will somehow be immune to saying goodbye to them when they're adopted. You know, like there's things that are comforting to me. It's very comforting to me to know that these cats are going to good homes with loving families, with other cats for them to play with. Like it, there are comfortable aspects of it. There are parts of it that maybe lessen the pain. Like when I had Ladle and Whisk and they were adopted by sisters and they were going to be neighbors for the rest of their lives. I'm like, that brought me so much joy that they were going to have each other for the rest of their lives. And I meet all of the people who adopt the kittens that I have, at least when they get adopted from me and it's not like they're getting passed off to another foster or being reunited with their siblings or whatever it is. But like all of the cats that go from me to their forever home, like I meet all of the people that adopt them and get to have my own little interactions with their adopters, which is like, that actually does make the handoff a little bit easier for me. Like it brings me joy to see someone else's excitement of bringing a pet home. I just remember how excited I was when I adopted Mango. And it is comforting to me to see other people experience that excitement and like meet the cats for the first time and be like just thrilled to take them home. That does help. And also the second the door closes, the second they leave my apartment and the kitten is gone, I am sobbing, 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 gasping for breath, sobbing. Okay. Mango and I had a good cry together when Bewildered left. I was distraught. I was distraught. This is the point. This is the purpose. There are so many cats out there that need homes. There is such a shortage of fosters. There needs to be people who are in this in-between space of like rescue and adoption. I can't adopt every single cat that comes through here, even though I would love to, even though my heart would want to. I know that fostering is important and it is a pain that I am happy to be familiar with because I think it serves a greater purpose. But I think the idea of familiarity not being able to protect you from pain is actually something I've thought about a lot recently in multiple different facets of my life. It's just sort of coming up right now in the conversation of fostering animals. But I think particularly as I start dating again, this has been something I've thought about as well, because I don't think that me being familiar with the feeling of contentment will actually protect me from the disappointment of realizing that someone does not fit into that image of contentment. I don't think that me being familiar with the uncertainty of dating makes it any less uncomfortable or at times anxiety-inducing. Like I don't think that familiarity has changed many things for me in terms of like numbing myself from the spectrum of my emotions or the intensity of those emotions. I think sometimes we convince ourselves that if we get good enough at something, if we repeat something enough times, if we become familiar with it, that we can numb ourselves from feeling whatever kind of pain or disappointment, sadness, grief, whatever it is. Like we think that if we go through the motions enough times that we can reach a point where we're unimpacted by it. And maybe that's true for some people or for some very specific sets of circumstances, but in a big, broad, vague, overall sense, I don't know that we can. I don't know that I can. And I don't think I want to. Like, I actually think I'd be kind of perturbed with myself. I think it would be strangely out of character for me if one day I woke up and was like, Yeah, you know, I've done the fostering thing for long enough. I've have enough repetition with it that now I'm able to ice my heart off completely from the way these sweet little baby angels make me feel. Like, I don't want to, actually. Yeah, it does hurt. And also, I have no intention to make it not hurt. I think I'm just accepting that, like, it is sad. It's sad, but it's for the greater good, you know? And as I'm starting to be open-minded about dating again, I've definitely thought about, like, yeah, sometimes disappointment comes with the territory. And you meet someone and you get hopeful about it and you're really liking how things are going, and then it just doesn't end up shaking out the way that you want it to. And maybe you are stressed out with the kind of uncertainty that exists in the middle of figuring that out. And then you have some, you know, disappointment, or there's like this fear of rejection, whatever it is. Like, there's so many feelings that come up during the span of dating. And I think sometimes I have convinced myself that I could get rid of all of those parts of myself. And now I just feel like getting rid of it actually isn't the goal. You know, I think there's something to be said about, like, harnessing those feelings and reminding yourself that, like, you are safe with yourself to feel all of them, and that you have what it takes to sit with and sort through those big feelings. I think sometimes I start to feel like I am a younger, less equipped version of myself. And sometimes it's actually helpful to, like, look at myself in the mirror and be like, hey, there was a time in your life where a feeling like this could have, like, really thrown you off. But that was then. That was you then. And now you are, like, so capable of sitting with this big feeling and sorting through it and letting yourself feel that pain and, like, walking your young self through it and getting to the other side of it just fine. It's not about not feeling the pain. It's about trusting yourself and knowing that you are safe with yourself, that you can take care of you. There's something there that I find really beautiful and kind of relieving, and, you know, it connects to so many corners of life. It's not just dating. It's not just fostering cats. It's so many things. I don't want to pretend like I'm so unfazed by life. That is just, like, so boring to me. Do you think people make art about how unfazed they are about life? Wouldn't that be so fucking boring? What is there to say if you're so unimpacted by everything that happens to you? I read something this week that was like, to play it cool is to survive someone else's emotional limits. And I couldn't agree more. Like, it's actually not serving you to be so fucking nonchalant all the time. That's for other people's consumption of you. It's not for your own experience of you. Because again, who's making art about being nonchalant? So boring. That's not what's inspiring or, like, I don't know, lust-inducing about your own life. Don't you want to experience it all? Am I crazy? Like, any takers for living on this fine Thursday morning? Like, I don't know. Even in, like, my experience of my anxiety, which feels so all-consuming, sometimes I want to literally throw my body away and be like, get out of here. Sometimes, because a lot of the time it feels like my anxiety, I can't think my way out of it. My brain can be so locked into something. Sometimes I really believe that I can think my way out of my anxiety, and I'll sit on the couch and I'll be like, we can come to a conclusion that makes this feeling go away. Let's sit and think. And I will sit here for hours trying to think myself out of it, and I am never able to. Sometimes I'm able to make things feel a little better, but I can never completely solve it because my brain can know things. My brain can have a lot of answers, right? But that doesn't mean that's how my body is going to feel it. The worst is when my brain has come to conclusions about things, but my body is still fully reacting as if I'm in like fight or flight. I'm in panic mode. There is something really terrible happening, whatever. Sometimes my body and brain are just, like, not linked up like that. But I learn something significant about myself every time I force myself to just sit in that feeling without constantly trying to look for a solution to that feeling. When I force myself to just sit and feel it rather than sitting here and thinking of all the ways that I could relieve the feeling, because I get it. You don't want to feel this way forever. You want to not feel this pit inside your stomach, this wave of anxiety, sadness, grief, whatever it is. Like, you just want to get rid of the feeling. I totally get it. Like I said, sometimes I do want to throw my body away. But there's something to be said in not always chasing after a solution to the pain you feel, a band-aid, a cover-up, something to take it away. Sometimes it's okay to like just be sad, to just feel grief, to feel loss, to feel disappointment, anxiety, whatever it is, to just feel it. No solution, no change, no cover-up, no band-aid, no nothing. Just sitting in it. Doing nothing. Doing nothing about it. Just letting it sit there. And that, to me, is one of the hardest things. Just letting it sit there as an overthinker that wants to find a solution and a fix to everything. Me sitting with my big, big, big feelings, the hurt, the pain, the grief, sadness, disappointment, despair, all of these things, my anxiety, to sit in that and not fight it and just let it exist is actually quite a feat. You know, I think it's much easier for me to accept my big emotions that are rooted in positive things, the lover girl of it all, the yearning, the longing, the loving, the like deep appreciation and romanticism of life. So easy for me to be all in on those ones. I think sometimes the bigger, more negative emotions, those are the ones that I try to find solutions for. And I think that fostering, among many other things, has been a like nice reminder for me to just let myself feel it. And there's not going to be a solution for it. And no matter how many times I sit on my computer and start asking Reddit, like, so how do you stop caring about this? It's never going to happen for me. I'm always going to care. I am always going to care so much I could literally throw up. And that's how I will remain. And I actually am fine with that because it feels like it's for my own personal greater good. This morning, I was deep in the Am I the Asshole subreddit, so I thought it'd be fun to do a segment going over some of the top posts from this week on the Am I the Asshole subreddit. I kind of love talking about Reddit on the podcast because the people we're talking about aren't here. Isn't that kind of fun? Isn't that kind of fun that they're not here? We can say whatever we want because they're an anonymous account on Reddit and they're not listening to whatever we're saying right now. Not that we're going to say anything crazy, but like we could. See, this is the sleepover gossip section where we talk about people that are not here. Probably. I mean, that would be a crazy coincidence if they were. Listen, let's just get into it. What are we even talking about? All right. First, am I the asshole? Am I the asshole for telling my best friend her marriage is doomed at her bachelorette party and accidentally getting the wedding canceled? I love when people do shit like this. I love those of you that are drama starters. Yes, I do. You give me things to enjoy in this life. This is why I love reality TV. All right. This weekend was a disaster. I, 27 female, have been best friends with Amy, 28 female, for years. She has been with this guy, Jake, for about 3, and honestly, he is a walking red flag. He is super controlling, jealous, and always checking her location. Once, he called her 9 times while we were just shopping at Target. Amy keeps defending him, saying he's just protective because he cares so much. Whatever. At her bachelorette party, it was supposed to be a fun girls' night, but Jake kept blowing up her phone. Texts, FaceTimes, asking where she was, accusing her of acting single. She kept leaving to call him back, crying and apologizing while the rest of us sat there awkwardly. After about the 4th time she left the table, I just lost it. When she came back, I said loud enough for the whole table to hear, "You are not marrying a husband. You are signing up for a lifetime of being babysat by a jealous man-child." Amy started crying and ran out of the bar. Half the girls followed her. Later that night, her mom called me, drunk, thanking me because apparently they have all been worried about Jake but did not know how to stop the wedding. Her mom told Amy that if she goes through with the wedding, they will not pay for it. Now Amy has blocked Jake, moved out of their apartment, and moved back into her parents' house. But she also blocked me for humiliating her. Half our friend group is saying I did the right thing. The other half is calling me jealous and toxic for blowing up her relationship right before the wedding. So am I the asshole? Okay. No, I don't think this person is the asshole. No. Okay. Final conclusion I'm coming to before I give any sort of justification. Slamming down the gavel. No, you are not the asshole. I don't think you're the asshole. You might be a bitch, but I mean that complimentary. So, are you an asshole? No. Are you a bitch? Maybe, to some people. But here's the thing. When you love someone, when you have a best friend who is dating someone who is controlling, insecure, just like an ultimate fucking bozo, you may, as a friend, really try to be supportive and offer your criticism in very moderate doses over the years, right? You don't want to criticize too hard and isolate your friend, push them away from you so that they don't confide in you when big things do happen, because you want to be able to be there for your friend and be involved in all of this. You might try to deliver your criticism in a more, just tempered way. But then when marriage is in the question and this person that you love so much is working towards getting very close to a marriage with someone who behaves like that and treats them like that, I empathize with the fact that your ability to have tact in your delivery at some point goes out the window. So yeah, could your delivery probably have been better? For sure. And also, I'm not even going to fault you for that, because I feel like there is a line with any person where it's like, listen, I'm not a robot. I love this person. I've been trying to be supportive and offer a different perspective from a more distanced place for years. Not distance, but you know what I mean? Just like trying to respect the fact that this is someone your best friend loves. And now it's getting too fucking real. We're on her bachelorette party and he is blowing up her fucking phone, accusing her of being single because she won't give him attention and she's off celebrating with her friends for the fucking night, as she should. That is no way to live. That is not the kind of person that you want to be married to, because honestly, that person doesn't sound like they're ready to be married. That person needs to not be married so badly. So was everything perfect about the way this shook out? No. Do I ultimately think it was the right thing? Yeah, I do. And I also understand, I can understand why your friend may have blocked you. I wonder if that'll be something that lasts forever. I feel like sometimes it seems like your friend received the message. You know, she's not with him anymore. It allowed her family to open up and be more honest about how they felt. She's moved out. She's moving on with her life. These are all good things. It seems like the block has more to do with her being embarrassed or humiliated and you being like the, starting point of that. I want to say that eventually she'll get past that though. I think sometimes when relationships like that end, people are so humiliated that they put up with it for so long and that there was an audience to that. And that is also very reasonable. And how people deal with that shame and all of the complicated feelings that come with that is also messy. So I understand why your friend might block you, because they're processing like their own shame and embarrassment from how this whole thing shook out in the first place. But it seems like they're at least on the same page now. Obviously, she left him. So it sounds like it's less about what actually happened and more about the shame that got brought up because of it, which is a very fair thing. but also the other half of your friend group calling you jealous is literally insane. Like, that is crazy. I almost have more judgment for, like, the other peripheral friends who were just bystanders in this whole fucking thing. Maybe it's because I've never been one to not have an opinion in my entire life, but, like, the idea of being at a bachelorette and one of my friends is about to be married to a fucko, an absolute fucko, and one of our other friends finally blows up and is like, this motherfucker is the worst. This is going to be the rest of your life if you don't fucking come to the realization that this is not normal. This man child is going to yell at you for the rest of your life and control everything that you do when he doesn't have eyes on you, unless you, like, wake up to the fact that this is not what love is. If I witnessed all of that, there is not one universe where I would just sit there quietly. And you know what? Maybe sometimes I wish there was. Do you know how many family arguments I've been a part of where I've sat back at the end of it and been like, why could I just not shut the fuck up? But the thing is that when I have an opinion, and I always have an opinion when it comes to the people that I love and their, like, safety, their happiness, and you know I would have an opinion about a horrible man. You think that I wouldn't have an opinion about a fucko like this? No, I'll have many stored in the back of my brain. I would like to think that I could have been, you know what? I won't even say that. Maybe I wouldn't have been better in my delivery. Sometimes you can't even control it. Sometimes it just happens. C'est la vie. Okay. We're not perfect people. My criticism is more for the other silent friends who just watched all of this happen and are now their conclusion at the end of this all was to be like, well, you're just jealous. Jealous. Of what? Map it out for me. Quickly. Quickly, what am I jealous of? Like, that is an insane conclusion to come to. They could come to the conclusion that, like, you handled it poorly and you should have delivered that criticism in a much better way. I think we can all agree that that probably should have been handled differently. But to say that you're jealous and that's why this is happening is, like, that's crazy. That's literally insane. And it doesn't even seem like your friend believes that if she's breaking up with him, right? Like, she called off the wedding. If she thought that, oh, it's just because you're jealous, then they'd probably still be getting married. So that's kind of lame. My judgment is more for those friends because that's such a dumb conclusion to come to. Jealous of a man that bombards your phone when you're walking through the aisles of Target. Who are you with? I see you in the board game aisle. Who are you playing games with if not me? What business do you have picking up code names? Like, your friend might not see it now, but I think years down the line, your friend is probably going to look back at this moment and be like, thank God. There needed to be a reckoning. There needed to be something major that happened, because sometimes delivering things nice and polite actually doesn't hit. Maybe it needed to go this way. We can always hope that things, you know, maybe move differently, but sometimes they just don't and they shouldn't. And in the long term, we all might be better off for it. Friends protecting friends from marrying shitty losers. Sometimes you gotta fall on the sword, you know? No good deeds go unpunished. All right, next up. Am I the asshole for reconsidering my engagement after he told me he will cheat on me if I don't have sex with him? I love being single. Yeah. Single ladies in the chat say, what's up, everybody? Can you imagine? Can you imagine if the person that you were dating, that you thought you were in love with, the person that claims to love you said a sentence like that to you? Some of y'all have fucked up perceptions of what love is. My fiance, 28 male, and I, 29 female, have been engaged for 3 months. This weekend, he wanted to talk. He basically told me that he has read a lot of stories about wives losing their libidos and putting husbands through dead bedroom or once a week sex. He said he will never accept this fate for himself, and if I neglect him sexually, he will likely have sex with other women, as in cheating on me. He felt that he needed to tell me this because sex is important to him and he needs me to understand that he is not going to be a guy who jerks off in the garage like a loser for the rest of his life. And if I potentially want him to be okay with less sex, then he is not the one for me. I can't. This is like his attempt at being communicative and emotionally aware. He did a very bad job. I was stunned and started to cry. He tried to console me and told me that he won't cheat if I got sick and can't have sex, but he doesn't want to be neglected sexually otherwise. I left and I've been reconsidering the engagement. I talked to my mom and she just said that he's just saying this. He won't actually cheat and he won't have time to cheat when he's busy with household responsibility. Ooh, come on, mom. My friends said that any man will eventually cheat if he's not going to get it at home. So even if I leave him, I'll be in the same position with any other man. Who the fuck are your friends? Don't get me wrong. I have friends who are supportive of me. It's just that everyone likes him, especially my mom. She thinks I am missing a lifetime of opportunity if I leave him. What makes me more mad is that he himself is most supportive of me about this whole thing. He's being understanding and acknowledging that I may not feel safe with him because of his comments. He's telling me to make the decision on my own and doesn't care what my mom has to say because it's my life. He has never given me any reason to doubt him or see him in a bad light. It's the best relationship. That's why I agreed to marry him. I agree that sex is important, but still, would all men risk their marriage for it? I am filled with doubts. I mean, this is insane. This is literally insane for so many reasons. Number one, if you want to have a conversation about how important sex is to you or how compatible your sex lives are, that's a totally fine conversation to have. I'm assuming you would have had it by now if you're at the point of an engagement and you're about to be married. You're like, by the way, it's almost like a threat, because I'm assuming if you're together and he's proposing, you already have some level of sexual compatibility established. But for your partner to look at you and basically threaten you and be like, and if this ever changes, if you ever have a lower libido, if your sex drive ever undergoes any type of change throughout this long life that we are about to commit to together, I'm going to cheat on you. Hey, that's abuse. Hey, so that's really crazy, actually. That is an insane thing for a partner to say to you, point blank period. We can have conversations till we are blue in the face about sexual compatibility and about how important sex is to you in a relationship. To threaten your partner or hold that above their heads as the thing between being with them and cheating on them, that's crazy. That is not appropriate. We don't do that to people we love. What the fuck is wrong with some of you? Like, that should be so easy. I know that this guy is out there somewhere being like, I communicated my needs. Yep, I told her exactly what I needed. And my need and my boundary is just that I expect to have sex multiple times a week. And if you don't do that, then I'm going to cheat on you. Unless you're sick or something. I'm not a monster. Like, I know he thought that made it better. He was like, if you get like deathly ill, obviously I wouldn't cheat on you then. Like, fuck, I'm not a sicko. But like, if you don't have a good reason for not having sex with me, because you just not wanting to have sex with me isn't a good enough reason, unless there is something physically preventing you from riding my dick multiple times a week, then I'm going to cheat on you. What? Lobotomy. I think that's the only solution. I don't know what else we can do. I think he's done. Like, we can't let him near another woman. We can't let him near her. The whole thing is literally insane to me. This message is bonkers. The mom is bonkers for being like, oh, he's just joking. He's just saying that. He won't actually have time to cheat when he's busy with household responsibility. And your friends are insane for being like, well, any man cheats if he's not getting it at home. So your choices are either obey this man's sexual impulses or get cheated on. Sorry. Who the fuck are you guys dating? Genuinely, who the fuck are you guys dating? I need you to be so much angrier than you are right now. I need you to be so much angrier. It's not even funny. What do you mean? You would not be in the same position with any other man. And if you would, wouldn't you rather just choose solitude? I can't imagine a world where I would choose being with a man who believes that his sexual desire, his sex drive is more important than my comfortability. I don't care what the fuck it is. If I don't want to have sex, I will not have sex. If I don't want to, you will not guilt trip me into it and threaten to cheat on me if I don't. Hello? That's not what love looks like to me. It's just a ridiculous conversation because sex drive does change. Like, it, you will have a fluctuating interest in sex in various periods of time in your life for a variety of reasons. Maybe you're experiencing grief and loss and your sex drive changes as a result. Maybe you're on a new medication and your sex drive changes as a result. Maybe birth control is impacting your sex drive. There's so many things that impact and change a person's sex drive over the course of their life to threaten someone and make them fear those changes and what that could mean, how they could betray you if that change does happen is diabolical. It is literally diabolical. Like for me, sex plays a pretty important role in my relationships. Sexual compatibility is definitely important to me. However, there is nothing in my head that's like, I need to be having sex X amount of times on this amount of schedule. And if I'm horny and my partner can't match that, I am mad. That's crazy to me. It's actually crazy. My partner could go through a period of time where they don't want to have sex for a full fucking calendar year and it wouldn't change anything. It's a conversation. That's a part of them that I would want to understand and find out how I could best support. But it's not something that would make me angry and resentful. Because when you love someone, navigating changes in sex drive and their relationship with sex is part of the fucking deal. Sex is complicated for lots of reasons, emotionally and otherwise. To deny your partners the ability to experience all of those complicated feelings around sex, threaten them, make them fear a changing relationship with sex, is abusive. I hate this. I would never marry someone like this. I think he has an incredibly toxic and twisted view on sex and how that exchange is supposed to look like between men and women in a relationship. Period. I don't care how great he is otherwise. This to me is like, this can't be the only thing he holds opinions like this on. This is the start. I'm sure there are many other things. This is crazy to me. This is literally insane. I can't imagine ever saying something like this to someone I claim to love. And fuck your friends. What the fuck? Get better friends too. Am I the asshole for not being intimate with my husband after he said he misses my pre-pregnancy body? I'm already going to tell you, no, you're not. I gave birth around 2 months ago. I'm up a bit more than 10 pounds from my pre-pregnancy weight. I'm rolling my eyes so hard. I'm up a bit more than 10 pounds from my pre-pregnancy weight. I'm in constant pain, barely getting sleep, still recovering. I've been easing back into the gym this past week. My husband and I were showering after having sex, and while feeling me, he said he misses my body, and he said I used to look so good in sexy clothes / lingerie before. I went quiet, finished my shower, and went to check on the baby. I brought it up later that he hurt me, and I'm self-conscious and trying. He just shrugged and said it's true. I cried in my car after my workout. He doesn't even work out, and he eats garbage. I've been feeling really down about my body since his comment, and I've pulled back from intimacy for a few days. He says I'm weaponizing sex, but I'm just struggling with how I feel about myself right now. Am I the asshole? No, you're not. He is. Fuck that guy. Oh my God. This is what I mean when I say sometimes I read things on the internet and I'm like, I love being single. Everybody leave me the fuck alone. Not to mention that 10 pounds is nothing. You effectively look exactly the same with a 10-pound weight difference. I can't imagine claiming to love someone and having 10 pounds. 10 pounds after delivering your fucking baby be the thing that makes you want to criticize her or not. The thing that makes her up to your standard or not. She just birthed a whole fucking human out of her body 2 months ago. Two, you fucking idiot. That's already like pretty early on to start having sex again after delivering a whole fucking child. You have the audacity, nerve, and gall to criticize her body at all. I swear to fucking God, if you have a child with someone and you say anything to them about their body outside of your body is a fucking miracle, you've just delivered me one of the greatest gifts of my life, you as a woman are one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my entire life. What you just did, the strength that you showed, the woman that you are to birth this fucking baby, to birth my child. I don't want to know what it's like to live inside the brains of these people whose ability to experience love is that surface deep. Holy shit. You looked so much better when you were 10 pounds thinner before you had my fucking child. Go fuck yourself. Go actually fuck yourself. And it's also heartbreaking that she even feels like she has to say to him, like, that hurt my feelings. I'm self-conscious and trying. Like, she has to justify the fact that she just gave birth to a fucking baby and she doesn't look the same as she did before she gave fucking birth. It's just insane. Not all people are like this. And when your wife comes to you and says, like, what you said was callous and cruel and you hurt my feelings, you know that I'm self-conscious about my body right now, to be vulnerable with your partner like that and have them meet you with a shrug and say, it's true. No, there's something very wrong with him. There's something very wrong with him, because why would you ever react to someone you love that way? Like, even if I was going to assume that you were an idiot that didn't realize how hurtful that would be to say to your wife, the second she tells you how deeply hurtful that is, if your response was anything other than, oh my fucking God, I'm such an idiot, I didn't mean it like that, you are so beautiful, I think you're so sexy, I'm an idiot for even saying something like that, I am fucking sorry, you are beautiful and gorgeous and you just gave me my child, the light of my life, if you say anything other than that, I think you can actually go to hell. Go to hell. What? No, I don't have time for men who terrorize women like this. Some of you need to be alone. Some of you need to be alone. Some of you need to be very sad and lonely. This is why I'm pro male loneliness epidemic. Sorry. We don't even have to get into that. But you know how I feel. And that's so funny. When he like disrespects the fuck out of you and then you're like, you know what? Actually, I don't want to have sex with you. And he's like, you're weaponizing sex. Fine. And what if I was? I'm not, but what if I was? Okay. Would you deserve it? Yeah. Yeah, you would actually. You dumb idiot. Bring back bullying in a major way. Are you the asshole for not being intimate with your husband after he said he misses your pre-pregnancy body? No, you're not the asshole. In fact, he is. And it's only him. And it's always been only him. Hope that clears things up. Am I the asshole for stopping my boyfriend's proposal at our best friend's wedding? I, female 26, and my boyfriend, male 25, attended a mutual friend's wedding. They're very close friends to us and brought my boyfriend and I together. My boyfriend and I are coming up on our 3-year anniversary and things were getting pretty serious. Enough so that I very much wanted to marry him. He's sweet, chatty, typically considerate, and empathetic. He's the person who I thought was the first to show me what a truly healthy and compassionate relationship was like. He's very serious about us too. We've had long talks about marriage and it seemed we were in agreement with no formal declaration. We'd even gotten as far as looking at rings, so the chance of proposal was more of a when and not an if. A few weeks before the wedding, us and the engaged couple at the time were hanging out. The topic of weddings was very prevalent and my boyfriend had cracked a joke about proposing at our friend's wedding. The to-be groom joked back and said that would be funny as hell. That was followed by me and the bride-to-be, both shutting it down, trying to be serious, but also not thinking that he was being serious. He was. During the reception, everyone had made their speeches and people were getting their food. While our table was waiting, my boyfriend went up to the DJ, and after, they played my boyfriend and I's favorite song to scream sang in the car together, Story of My Life by One Direction. I look at him smiling and he's looking around. All of a sudden, he grabs a fork, stands up, and begins clanging on a glass. Immediately, the whole dining room looks over. I stand up and whisper the words, "Not right now." His face drops and he yells a mix of, "I'm sorry, I was just joking." After he sat back down, I verbatim said, "Let them have their moment. Let's make this our own." He wouldn't even look at me. When it was time to get our food, he immediately goes towards the exit. I follow and tried to catch up to him, but couldn't find him. I text him twice and call him a couple times, but got no answer. So I went back to the reception. After not hearing from him for about an hour and a half or so, he returns, sits down, and doesn't even look at me. The rest of the night was terrible. He looked like his dog just died, and I'm trying to make the best out of our night, but felt like I was just in his shadow. I was prepping for a breakdown or maybe a fight in the car, but the only thing he said was, "I don't want to talk about it right now," and the drive was just quiet and awkward. He sent me a long text about how hard it was to get the ring, how he felt rejected by his closest person, and that I embarrassed him. I tried to explain that it's not that I didn't want to marry him. It was our best friend's wedding and they deserve their moment, that we should create our own and not piggyback off theirs. He got offended and said that if I wanted to marry him, I wouldn't have stopped his proposal in front of everybody. This situation perplexes me. I've never seen the appeal of proposing to someone at someone else's wedding, and tried to handle the situation in a way that I felt was calm and chill. But he's very adamant that I ruined the proposal, made him look like an asshole, and thus I'm the asshole. Am I missing something? Should I admit I was wrong and have just let his proposal go at our friend's wedding? I don't know why anyone would try to propose at someone else's wedding. It is such a prolific, should be studied in a lab by scientists level of a lack of self-awareness and selfishness. It's weird. It is very weird for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously it's a wedding celebrating someone else's relationship entirely. It's not about you. And if you propose to someone at their wedding, suddenly it does make it all about you. And two, what's romantic about piggybacking off of all of the choices that a different couple made for their wedding in a location, place among people that are all there to sort of capture and memorialize their love? What would be romantic about that in admiration of your own love and your own relationship? And wouldn't you feel weird being all these beautiful things that are surrounding us, they were paid for by a different couple? Anything that would have made your proposal memorable or special, you didn't have any role in at all. There was no thought put into that. Isn't that the whole point, you guys? Hey, romanticism is dying among some of you, because what the fuck? What is romantic about that? Okay, the venue looks beautiful. You didn't pick it. You didn't pay for it. You didn't design it. It has nothing to do with your love, your specific love and story with the person you're proposing to. This is someone else's story. This is someone else's relationship that someone else put time and thought and money into, and you're just going to hijack it, not only taking the attention away from them, but also just throwing away your opportunity to do something genuinely thoughtful and specific to the person you are trying to propose to. What? Don't you want it to be specific to them and to your relationship? Don't you want to actually express your love to someone in a way that is unique to your relationship? Why would it be a good idea to propose at someone else's wedding? I don't even know. I don't understand what any of the thought process is, even beyond the it's rude to the couple. It's also it's just none of this is about you and your relationship. Do you think that your girlfriend is really going to be so wooed and impressed by having the entire visual memory of her proposal be the vibes of someone else's wedding? That's not romantic. It's not about her. Honestly, I think you did him a favor by stopping him before he could really get into it. You saved him so much more humiliation, because do you know the amount of people that would go home from that wedding being like, oh my fucking God, can you believe he proposed at their wedding? Like, that's all anyone would talk about for literally forever. Your proposal would be remembered in everyone's brain as like this insane moment of selfishness at someone else's wedding. That is way worse and way more embarrassing. You actually saved him from his most diabolical fate, okay? To be remembered as someone who pulled a move like that at someone else's wedding, oh, it's just like, that is the real horror story. It's just like, it's hard for me to even get into the brain of someone who would make this decision, because it just seems like so obviously not the right thing. It's like kicking a dog, you know, like, you don't do that. That is bad. You don't propose at someone else's wedding. That is weird. Like, it is truly something that feels so self-explanatory that it's hard to even know what to say. Like, yeah, obviously you were not the asshole. What is wrong with your boyfriend? And like, maybe he's just like a well-meaning bozo, but I've got many more questions about this relationship following this submission, to be honest with you. So no, you're not the asshole. And hopefully you'll be able to work through whatever this was, but yeah, confirmed you were not the asshole in the case of stopping your boyfriend from proposing to you at someone else's wedding. I can't. Dude, I love being single. Yeah. Oh, everyone's in a good mood now. We're ending the episode on a high note, okay? We started somewhere a little bit more solemn, you know, sad times. As we go on, we remember. All right. We started somewhere and we're ending somewhere totally different. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome news, you guys. Okay, we're gonna throw it on over to the post show, where I'm going to be exposing my dating profile and letting you guys see how I have set up my Hinge profile. Dun dun dun. As requested, listen, I saw your comments. You want to see what I did to the profile, so I'm gonna show you, but it's gonna be over on Patreon. So if you're interested in coming, hanging out a little more, talking about dating apps and setting up your profile, be sure to go join us over on Lover Girls HQ. And if not, I will see you guys in next week's episode. Love you so much. Goodbye.